So our story in a nutshell, Ed was married before, and his first wife they had four kids together, and when she was 32 and our kids were really, really young, she was diagnosed with a brain tumor and lived for 1 year, and went to be with Jesus, and shortly thereafter, I became the nanny for the kids. And
I wisely took her off payroll and married her.
Which we could potentially say there was, you know, in this day and age, that would there would be some kind of harassment in inappropriateness of my employer
yeah, there you go.
Pursuing me. But anyway, so that was 24 years ago. Is that right? 24.
We had our 24th wedding anniversary
in
so
May.
25 years.
Yeah.
A quarter May, century 20. Together.
Anyway. Yeah, so it's been a while, and
what's
it's
the age difference.
Ed's
92 years.
Ed was 35.
He was that way.
Okay.
Ed was 35. I was 23 when we got married. Ed is from Ohio. I was from a little small town in Mississippi.
Where I grew up,
and also where Wilson's grandmother grew up.
I was the pastor of First Pres Kosciuszko, where Pam Benton was a little girl and through high school.
Parents lived. Anyway.
Yeah.
And so our journey was, I mean, like you think about the complexities of your relationship, that, I mean, obviously wonderful things have drawn you guys together, or else you wouldn't either be married or be about to be married. And so, but there are also complexities that come with every single relationship. And ours were kind of off the charts. There was a huge 12 years age difference. I was a child, essentially, at 23. He was a pastor, had been married 10 years before, with four children. I was incredibly spiritually immature. He was a pastor. And so
that didn't mean he was spiritually mature.
Well,
she didn't say that, did she? Now,
I didn't say that.
She meant it though.
And so I feel like we had like a lot of things stacked against us. And so for our whole marriage, all 24 years of it, we have been we have enjoyed wonderful connection as a couple, and we have also had lots of disconnection as a couple. And so we have had to learn what it means to reconnect over and over and over and over again. And so as you start out the six-week course of things that are really important for foundations of marriage, one of the best things that we can give you is just an overview of what that looks like, connection, disconnection, and how to reconnect, because that's going to be the pattern for your whole marriage, and if like all of it, not just the early parts when it's hard. But your whole marriage is going to follow that pattern.
And if you don't learn the pattern well, you'll end up living in denial or stonewalling or pretending a lot. And that's sometimes easier than learning how to connect and reconnect well. So we're going to hand out a diagram. And
here, I'll just go ahead and hand out. This is, so, we'll give you an empty one right now that you can use to sort of take notes in,
and
if you have a pen
done,
and you want to.
We'll give you the same diagram with all the notes filled in, okay? So you can either take a ton of notes or you can take no notes, whichever you prefer. I'll put one of these up here. Yeah. So four core principles in connection. There's really a lot to the psychologists talk about attachment theory, and that there's a design to a husband and wife coming together. I mean, on one level, it goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 2, where God says it's not good for man to be alone, so I'll make someone to complete him. And there's a unique completion and reflection of the glory and the image of God in God bringing two people together. But not just living in proximity to one another, because that's not enough. But it's the attachment, it's the connection, and the deepening of that connection, and all that it means. What we're going to talk about in the next, oh gosh, barely over 30 minutes, is the rest of your life. This would take days and years and months, and it will take you a long time to unpack and process, but this is a starting point. So a couple of principles on this. One, we were made for this connection. God designed us to have this kind of connection. Secondly, we will disconnect. It's a sinful, broken world, Sin has entered in. It's ruined what God had designed to be perfect. And you will disconnect sooner or later, or you may spend most of your relationship in an ongoing experience of disconnection. Third, God has made a plan by which we reconnect. And fourth, the conflict, the disruption, the chaos that leads to the disconnect is not only inevitable, but it's actually necessary. If you're going to get to what God has designed for that connection, you're going to have to work through a lot of disconnection, figure out what caused it, what needs to be given over to the Lord Jesus, what needs to be emptied, so that you can know a deeper connection than you ever knew before. That's the high level, right?
And so we're going to give you like a tool, which is actually going to be kind of like a grid that you can use. You know how a GPS, you can punch in and say, I want to get to Hattiesburg, and it will take you there, but it cannot get you there unless it knows where you're starting, right? So this tool is going to be helpful to say, if we want to get to true connection, true community is what we want in our marriage, to know each other, to be loved, known, seen, accepted, valued, all of those things. If that's what we want, but we have to sometimes know, like, where are we if that's not what we're experiencing right now? So we'll know how to get back to what it is we really want. So that's what this pathway, this, I don't think anybody, that might not even be necessary because nobody can really see it. But anyway, so this is going to be kind of a grid, so you can see where you can plot yourself, and also to normalize that, like, that when the conflict comes, when the chaos comes in your life, don't panic. It's going to be okay. Like Ed said, it is a normal, not fun, but a necessary part of our relationships.
Okay. For some people, it won't be okay, and because then, they don't go through the process, they leave.
And then
it's really not okay.
Yeah. And then the other part is that it's an invitation to reconnection, so that when you're in that place of like, this feels really bad, I don't really like this, and I don't know what to do because I feel disconnected from you, like, to know that reconnection can come. Because sometimes that feels like a hopeless place of, this doesn't feel good, we're disconnected, and how do we get back to know that there is a pathway through?
So quick question for you to answer, 30 seconds. Where have you experienced real connection? What does it feel like to really, we should ask the people who've been, I'm assuming you've been married longer than the Hardys or us.
Right.
What does real connection feel like? Not just you guys. Examples. What's it feel like to know deep connection? If you're engaged or married, you ought to know, right? Does it feel dangerous or does it feel safe?
Oh, safe.
Safe. What else?
I feel known.
Okay.
Yeah.
Known. Great.
Yeah, for safe, I would put not being judged.
Uh-huh.
Or no shame involved. Mm-hmm. In the.
What else? You know, that unconditional love. Like,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, unconditional love.
Of responsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And a welcoming of a variety of emotional states.
Mm-hmm.
Welcoming, I like that.
Welcoming, accepting.
Is it fake or is it honest? It's honest, it's transparent. On this list, we have things like being seen, known, loved, emotional, physical, and spiritual intimacy. That's all part of connection. Trust, safety, honesty, united without uniformity, delight and joy, priority in one another's lives, feeling understood, feeling like I matter. The list can go on, but that's a starting point.
And you've known that, right? Or a taste of that in your relationship, or you wouldn't be getting married, or you wouldn't have gotten married, right?
Right. But is that where we always are? Or is it really where we start? If you think about getting engaged, most of us get engaged because we put our best foot forward. You know,
I mean, Ty had to try really, really hard to get Rebecca to agree to say, yes, I'll marry you.
Or think about, go back even further to like when you're first dating. You know, there's this sense, you can kind of call it like a pseudo community where it's not real in some respects. You don't really know each other, right? There's not really a lot of vulnerability on that first date when you're first meeting. You're like presenting the very best version of yourself to the person that you're going out
with. It's sort of like Facebook. Who here puts on their Facebook site pictures that make them look unattractive? Nobody. We put on our Facebook, our social media sites, things that make us look good, desirable, attractive, connected, all those things. But it's not real. It's not the totality of who we are. And the totality of who we are, we're really reluctant to show until we're much farther down the road. So we start off there.
Here, you want to write while I...
Sure.
Yeah, so the pseudo-community part is generally where all of our relationships start. It's not a bad thing. You really have to go through that in order to have any other kind of connection. You know, it's the get-to-know-you stage. It's the kind of the honeymoon stage. It's where you're really not going to say something to offend someone else or to rock the boat. It's going to kind of be like, let's just keep the peace and say whatever we need to say to make sure we get along, right? And that's a necessary part of relationship. If when you meet somebody, you go straight into this raw vulnerability, it's probably going to push whoever you're talking to away. So what are some of the other characteristics of this stage of relationship? Can you think of anything else?
A mask.
A mask? Yeah. Yeah, we wear masks. Yep, there's a self-protection, right? Because I don't know you well enough to know that you're going to take care of me if you see who I really am. And so I'm going to put up some screens here. Anything else that you can...
Surface level?
Yeah, there's a surface level.
Distance.
And some distance, yeah. You're not super, super close, because if I'm too close, then maybe you're going to see things you don't really like and back away. So that is what pseudo community is. But then if you're in
just read the rest of the things on the list so they know what we are.
So it's the honeymoon stage. You don't rock the boat, don't say something that will upset someone else. You want to be seen a certain way, self-protective, put your best foot forward. It's kind of like your resume, Facebook. And what does it feel like in that? What kind of feelings, words would you give for that?
Fear.
Yeah, there's a lot of fear in that, right? What else?
Hesitation.
Maybe some shame, some hesitation. And along with that, it's also where you experience like peace, right? Because you're not necessarily doing some of the hard relational work. So it can be, when you stay on that surface, it can be fun and easier. In a lot of respects.
And it can also feel safe.
And it can feel safe.
I think we're willing to put energy at that point.
Yes.
You know, ready to give more than the 50%.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this pseudo-community is not just true of relationships. I mean, it's certainly true here. Who's starting med school shortly? Is that you? You're starting. You're starting in pseudo community because you're in there. I made it in. I got to make sure that I show them I can do this. I got to prove myself. That's one of the big parts of pseudo community. It's I got to prove myself.
I want you to like me, so I'm going to do things to.
I want to perform, so you say, attaboy, so I get the grade. It's even in relationships. So it's not just in this newlywed engaged place, but it's almost anywhere you start something new. It starts here. But though it starts here, it almost always goes to chaos. Chaos. What's my other word? Here, why don't you write?
Yeah, disconnection, disruption, chaos, and conflict. Because we live in the fall, right? So it's inevitable. And as Ed said in the beginning, it's not just inevitable, but it's actually necessary. Yeah. So
part of the process we've got to prove to you that it's necessary, right? Because, yeah, you'd agree that it is inevitable. It's a broken world. Two people who have pretty separate stories and separate desires. I mean, there's some of our desires that are overlap, but there are things that Emily really wants for her life and our story that aren't all that important to me. Matter of fact, some of those things run counter to what I most want. Simple example, Emily really loves, well, she loves being around other people, and if she had a choice, she'd fill almost every hour with being with different people. Whereas me, I do this for my work. When I'm done at the end of the day, I really would kind of like to be more withdrawn and quiet, and let's find a safe place, and maybe we'll come back to that at the end and talk about how we spend our evenings or what might happen if one desire goes against another.
But even simple things like that, it's not right or wrong, but that can often cause conflict, tension, because we have different desires. We're made differently.
Yeah. And what you'll discover is most of the disconnection, most of the chaos, the conflict, the disruption, most of it will be over really silly, dumb, inconsequential things. There will be some big issues. That's inevitable too. But the majority of the stuff that will keep you from true community and will disrupt your pseudo community will be dumb stuff, ordinary, very pedestrian kind of things, right?
And the chaos and conflict can come from like interpersonal things, and it can also come from outside. Like what are some of the things that invade your space that cause conflict?
Children
are one of the huge,
hypothetically speaking.
Of course, we don't know that personally.
The visualization I'm getting from pseudo to in chaos is, in the early stages, you're checking boxes, white picket fence, mm-hmm. and those boxes are really easy to agree on.
Mm-hmm. Right,
they're right at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
And then as you at some point, your list of checkboxes and your spouse's kind of divert.
Exactly.
You get all the easy ones out of the way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you think that's enough. Of course, we're so compatible.
Yeah.
Well, we both like pizza.
Your boxes start conflicting with one another. Yeah. You won't check this one, or they won't check this one.
Yeah.
And you might lose a few of those boxes you thought you had permanently checked.
Sure.
Exactly.
Chaos enters and...
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, the old adage is the three things you will conflict over most often throughout the course of your marriage is money, sex, and kids. And number four, closely on the heels, which complicates all the other three, is in-laws. So money, sex, kids, and in-laws, how they intersect with those other three. And sometimes it'll be minor things, sometimes it'll be major things, but the money issues can be an outside and an internal disruptor. And my values on money conflict with Emily's values on money. And, you know, who's a more freer spender? Who's tighter? Who is more willing to say, well, I'd be happy to go out and spend $100 on a nice meal out. Or I hate wasting money on food. I'd rather buy a new couch or whatever. It's values. It's small things. But they can take that pseudo community and very quickly take it into chaos and conflict.
And what does it feel like? Not that any of you have ever been in chaos or conflict yet, but hypothetically speaking, what would that feel like?
Do you feel understood when you get into that chaos and conflict and disruption? So you feel misunderstood.
Frustrated.
Frustrated. Mm-hmm. Do you feel connected during that? No, you feel
lonely.
Disconnected, lonely. Mm-hmm. Yep. What else? Say again?
Gut punched.
Mm-hmm. Gut punched, yeah.
Because you're feeling like super good and close, and then all of a sudden something comes out of nowhere and disrupts what we really want.
And no matter how much you love adventure, down deep, God wired us to want to feel safe, right? Mm-hmm. And so you feel safe in true community, actually feel safe in pseudo community. Here's where you start feeling really unsafe, and that's critical.
So, do you want to move on?
I'll read to you the rest of the words that we have here. It feels like lonely, misunderstood, frustrated, sad, angry, numb, grieving.
I think I would love to spend a whole session just on grieving, because no one trains us for grieving. And yet the more time I spend with people dealing with the ordinary stuff of their lives, I mean, we had dinner with someone in Miller Hall who we had never met before. And I just kind of, so tell me your story. Where are you from? What do you do? How'd you get here? And she started telling me the story, and I was fighting back tears. And she was had tears streaming down her cheeks because her story was, I don't know how she's made it this far, frankly. And it hit me, this woman is overwhelmed with grieving, but may not even understand how powerful grieving is operating in her system. Does that make sense? So one of the places where you guys, this is an aside, it's not in our notes, but you need to work hard on developing a vocabulary and a lens and a processing system is to learn how to enter into one another's grieving, to help your spouse or spouse-to-be to recognize their places of deep grieving, and then with attunement to help them work through it. And you're both going to need that help.
Actually, listen, I had a class last night, and the guy was talking about anxiety, and he actually said one of the ways that anxiety is treated is by making room for grief. And I thought that was so interesting. Grieving is actually one of the ways through anger. It's one of the ways through anxiety. And it is one of the best like paths through so much of the brokenness that we experience. And yet we're not very good at grieving.
What's the biblical word for learning how to process our grieving biblically? Starts with L.
Lament.
Thank you. Nobody trains us how to lament, do we? I mean, it's half the Psalms are at least partially informed by lament. There's a whole book of the Bible all about lamentations. Back to the notes, right? That's a deviation.
So
it feels like those things we said. What it does, it either fights or it flees. Those are the two primary responses, the natural responses to the chaos and conflict. In the fight, we argue, we feel contempt or show contempt toward one another. We criticize, we try to fix, we defend, we blame. DDR, defend, deny, rationalize. Sometimes we spiritualize if we're Christians or in ministry. Or we stonewall, or we just withdraw. And when you get into that disruption, the chaos and the conflict, you have three choices.
So, and this is where it's very helpful to know, like, where am I on this grid? Because when you hit that point of feeling misunderstood, frustrated, lonely, gut punched, unsafe, typically you're going to want to say, I don't want to be here anymore because this feels so bad. I want to get out of this. And you have three choices. The first one is probably not, hopefully not your first choice, but a choice is to get out and just say, I'm done. And a lot of people do it when they get in conflicts at church. They're just like, I'm going to find a new church. Or if we get in conflicts with friendships, we walk away from friendships. But you are covenanted to each other in marriage. And getting out, your only option is death or divorce. So you're stuck with each other, which is God's gift to us, actually, so that we will connect and reconnect.
50%, the broad statistics are, in this kind of place, left there long enough, 50% of people would just leave, say, we're done, I'm out.
But that's not likely our first option. There's another way to get out, and it's to go back up to pseudo-community, because that feels so much easier.
And that's the major default response.
And so what happens then is we go back to, okay, fine, let's just get over it. We sweep things under the rug. We just pretend like everything's okay. It's okay, honey, whatever you want. It is
giving in
peace at all cost, or we distract ourselves and say, oh, this is too, like being close to you is too hard and this conflict feels too bad. So let's just spend all our time with other people and include other people, or I'm going to go play golf and you go do your thing. And we just kind of live separate lives. And I know that early in your marriage, you probably cannot even imagine doing that. But those of us who have been married, how easy is it to go back up to pseudo community and just say, oh,
So I
that
read,
feels bad.
I read an author who talked about this, and I can't for the life of me find what it was I read, but he used a term that has really resonated with me of what people do when this gets so bad, they can't leave for a variety of reasons, or won't leave, so they go back to this, and he called it contractual indifference, which it's sort of like you make this, it's never written in stone or in blood or in ink, but it's just this kind of quietly understood agreement, and this is how we operate. I've got my stuff, and it keeps me busy, and my responsibilities, and I'm going to do that. You got your stuff and your people, and you're going to do that. And I'm not going to waste a lot of energy carrying your load. And you're not going to waste a lot of energy helping enter into my world. Neither of us is going to attune to the other or show empathy to the other or enter into the other's experience to help them carry it. We're just going to quietly agree to kind of live with some measure of buffer
distance.
Between us.
Distance, right? Which isn't the connection we were made for.
And so it's back here.
Yeah. So the third option is to actually move through. And what we really want to do is get to true community, because that's what we know we were made for. It's the reason why we got married. And we want to experience all those things that we just mentioned. But the only way to get to there is to go through what the stage that's
Can
called.
Can I clarify that before you go? We really, down deep, we know this, we've got the vocabulary, we want this. And when it feels really bad, we want to go straight to this. We want to get here. And it's a good desire, right? But you can't get there. For reasons that are part of living in a broken world, we go into all of those, you can't go from here to here. You have to go, this is your third option, through this one here, and you've got it on your chart.
And it's called emptying. And really, I would say it's not just living in a broken world, but that's following the path of Jesus, right? Because Jesus came, he emptied himself. He entered into our brokenness. He didn't take us straight to heaven and escape all of it, but he entered in to redeem us and to invite us to follow into his footsteps. Of
where does the Bible talk about that?
In Philippians 2, where Jesus demonstrates his own... though he was...
For you, attitude ought to be that of Christ Jesus, who though he was in very
nature
God,
did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, becoming a servant. I forget the rest of it out of memory.
He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross.
And so that's
the picture of emptying.
Mm-hmm.
Is this mine?
I think it's yours, Kurt. I don't know.
We have these color-coded notes, but we only did them at 4 o'clock. So emptying.
And we're almost out of time too.
Yeah,
so.
That's why we're kind of going fast. In the emptying, we could spend a long time. Really, Aaron Wilson is going to come and talk about communication and conflict, which he's really going to talk about how does that work in the details of how do we talk to one another when we're here? How do we honor one another well so that we're listening, not just to understand, say, okay, I get it, I understand, but to attune. What does attunement mean?
Attunement is matching my feel. If I'm attuning to Ed, it's matching my emotions and my feelings to what's going on in him. Because it is so easy for Ed to come home and say, I had such a bad day at work, there were so many conflicts, I'm making things up.
And Emily says, sucks for you.
And I say, oh, or I try to fix it quickly and say, well, you should talk to so-and-so, because if you do that, then that wouldn't be the issue. And I've totally missed him in both of those instances, whether I completely dismiss it or whether I try to fix it. But what he needs is for me to say, gosh, I bet that's really hard. Tell me more about that. Like, what's that like for you to be in that place, in that situation?
One of the questions that we often use and encourage, we talked about this with you guys, but what does it feel like to be you today? It sounds like a simple question, but it's not how was your day, but what does it feel like to be you? Because that opens up, when you're using feel, it's not just this is what my day was like, but this is what I feel like today. And it can be everything from energized, deflated, defeated. We got time, yeah. But to learn to attune, not just to say, okay, now I know, thank you for informing
it's
me,
it's not
but
just
to attune.
Understanding with your mind, but it's connecting on a deeper emotional level. Because the truth is, God made us body, mind, soul, but there is this emotional part of who we are. And if we don't connect on that level, then there's a part of us that is actually disconnected. So the emptying is letting go of something. What kinds of things do you have to let go of? Let me do that.
Put two words here.
Go ahead.
What kinds of things do you have to let go of when you're in conflict?
Being right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Being right.
My plan.
Pride,
absolutely. The way I see things in this situation. What else?
Comfort,
yeah.
How about being understood?
Oh, that's the biggest one for me. It is so hard to be misunderstood.
My mother, probably the most godly person I've ever known, she's with the Lord now, but she had a very heavy German accent, and she used to say, following Jesus means giving up our rights, and the hardest right to give up is the right to be understood. We feel, well, I have a right to be understood. I mean, I deserve to be understood the way I intend to come across. And Jesus says, really? Because the one who emptied himself, who had every right to claim his rights as God himself, said, no, I'm going to set that aside. I'm going to empty. In theology, we call that the kenosis, the self-emptying of all that he was entitled to. He set that aside to enter into our brokenness. So if that's the pattern of the gospel, and if that's the only way to go from chaos and conflict to the true community, it's really important to figure out what are the things about which I wrap my white-knuckled fingers and say, I am not letting go of this. I'll let go of this, but this, no. While I'm living and breathing, I am not letting go of this. Do you know what those are for yourself? Do you know what those are for your spouse or spouse-to-be?
And those are important things to pay attention to. And so what some of this is work for you to do in your own relationship of when is it, when you know you're going back up to pseudo community, like what are the characteristics for you? What are the things that you do when you know you've gone back up? What are the things that you know, if we're in conflict, I know this is what my response is going to be. And what is emptying, like what are the things that typically are going to be the things God's going to be inviting you to empty yourself of. So being really self-aware, because it's so easy to say, you need to empty yourself of this instead of recognizing what I need to let go of. And it is a letting go, and it's also a turning towards, because there's, like we said, in the situation with, I want to go out and be with people and he wants to stay home, not a right or wrong thing.
Why don't you use that illustration at this point?
So if he comes home from work, and in my mind, I'm thinking, hey, let's go out for dinner. I hadn't cooked anything. I work from home. I've been at home all day. Let's go out. And he comes home and he says, oh, I've had a day, and he wants to stay in. Neither's right or wrong, but all of a sudden there's conflict of desires, right? We want two different things.
Hold on a second. What's that feel like? So is her desire, she's been home, working from home in front of a computer screen all day, and she's not had hardly any three-dimensional physical interaction with someone else, and she really wants to go out, be in a nice restaurant, be among people. I've been with people since 6 o'clock that morning, meeting and meeting and meeting. I just want to be home. I'm an introvert. I'm spent. I've used all my words. I just want to get a pizza and turn on something.
So someone's going to lose, right? Like, we can't both get what we want in that.
And then you tend to say, come on, we did it that way. Like, come on, see. And you end up with conflict and disruption. What do you do?
Or there's the other option of saying, fine, let's just do, I'll empty myself of my desires and I'll just stay home with you. But that's not real connection
either,
right?
But I'll be irritated
right?
The whole time we go. And I'll make you feel how irritated I am. Well, if we had just stayed home, we wouldn't have gotten rotten service.
Yeah. And so there's a letting go, but there's also a turning towards of, okay, tell me what it feels like to be you. So it's not just my desire against yours, but what's underneath the desires? you know? And then as we understand each other and as we listen to each other, and he says, you know, it's not just that I'm tired of being with people all day, but this is what happened today at work and I just am spent. I got nothing left. Then I can actually turn towards that. And it's not just, I want to go out, he wants to stay in, but there's something I can deeply connect with and I can offer him something.
Or it might be that it's not just that she's been in front of the computer screen all day today, but she's really missing our grandkids who live just down the street, but she's not been with them. And I think, well, you know, it'd be kind of fun to be with the grandkids. You want to go out? I really don't want to be in, I don't want to be in deep, drag down conversation and have to think hard about what I'm saying and how I'm listening. What do you think if we go grab the kids and take them for pizza and ice cream? And we'll just lower the requirement for what kind of conversation are we going to have and just enjoy the grandkids. There's a variety of ways. What's really behind the desires? What are the values that are driving your strongly expressed interest, and how do we get there?
And so if the goal becomes getting what I want, then we've missed each other. And interestingly too, as we wrap up, if the goal, if like what is the center of this is let's have a good, healthy relationship that's where we're closely connected, if we are in the center of this, then we've missed it too, because then we become so inward focused that it's about us and our marriage. And God's gonna make sure that the idol of our marriage gets toppled, because he is the only one who takes the center place of that. And as we instead turn our gaze together, fix it on him, and know that going through that conflict is actually what transforms us. It's what makes us look more like Jesus. It's what makes us know our need for Jesus more. It's what helps us grab hold of each other and say, we both need Jesus right now, even more than we need each other. Like, that's what's gonna unite our hearts and give us the deep connection on a deep level that getting whatever it is we want never, ever will.
So, my first wife grew up in a family where she told me when we were engaged, I have never once seen my parents conflict. And I thought, there's no way. And yet she was honest. She had never seen her parents conflict because her parents didn't conflict. And their parents had what you call a peace at all costs. Anytime they got to any kind of slight disruption, they just put down their desires. I didn't want it that bad anyway, because peace and connection, and we have this marriage that looks like we're always in agreement. That was the great goal. You've probably heard Tim Keller say that anytime you take a good thing and you make it an ultimate thing, it becomes an idolatrous thing and a destructive thing. So what Emily was saying is the connection we're talking about, really this is the starting point. It'll be the context within which you process every day of your marriage. That's a good thing, but it's not the ultimate thing. If you make it the ultimate thing, if you make connection, attachment, attunement the ultimate thing, you'll destroy your relationship.
And as Zeb Henson will probably talk about next week with marriage as mission, what the world needs to see is not a perfect marriage. The world needs to see a marriage that is struggling and dependent and turning to Jesus and needs Jesus to rescue us and to transform us. And so all, as we said in conclusion.
Let me add that.
Yeah.
The world needs to see Christian couples who conflict and who work through the conflict and reconnect in a more beautiful way than before they conflicted. That's a rare thing. And yet that's what honors the Lord Jesus. It's not a conflict-free marriage that honors Jesus, because that, it may just be that we have really good communication skills and we've learned how to live in contractual indifference. You can make that look really good. And a lot of people do.
And so being able to know, where are you? Where am I on this grid? And where do I need to follow Jesus to both connect with him and connect with my spouse is part of what this is for. And I would also say, this is a total aside, but one of the deaths to connection and marriage is comparing your level of conflict or your capacity for connection or whatever with other marriages. Like we said, we started out with everything stacked against us, and we have had to work so hard at connection.
How much conflict have we had?
Oh my word, we have had so much conflict. And
so we talk, why can't our marriage be more like Ty and Rebecca's? They never conflict.
I mean,
right.
They make it look so good.
But there are those people who do. Maybe it's not a peace at all cost marriage, but it's just an easier marriage. That's not what ours has been. It's been work. And it has been sweet and good, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it has been what God has used to transform me and us.
But it's felt like death a lot, hasn't it?
But it has also felt like death, and we have had to experience the resurrection of new life coming.
That's what,
so
I mean,
often.
And Satan wants that. Like, he wants us to compare. Like, that's just an attack of Christian marriage.
And we all want resurrection life and power in our marriage, but the condition, the precondition for resurrection is death. If there's no death in your experience, you'll never know resurrection, right? That's why conflict in marriage is not just inevitable, but it's necessary to get you where Jesus intends your marriage to take you, so that Christ becomes more precious and more visible to you and through you.
So any questions as we wrap up?
We motored through that too fast.
Sorry. You're going to drill down further in conflict and communication, which will go back through some of this stuff, I'm sure.
So,
and Ed's going to pass out a filled out version, which may help too. But any thoughts or questions as we wrap up? Pray.
Can you all share your numbers? Should we put cell phone numbers on the board today?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let me share this number.
But I would also say that
601-954-5382. If you get in trouble,
who's
that? Call that number.
I would also say this, just starting.
How far would you just appropriate?
No. That this, what you guys have here in this connection with the community, with each other, is a really valuable thing. Ed and I just did a 6-week kind of cohort with 4 or 5 other couples who've been married 10 years and longer. And one of the things that we found so valuable that we hardly ever do once you get married is like talk about marriage with other couples. So let this community or another community that you have be a safe place where you can struggle alongside others, because we are all in this battle, this pilgrimage together.
With a couple of conditions. Agree up front, you're not going to bash each other in those contexts. If you're going to talk about places where you're struggling, do it with honor and respect, and don't trash the person who's making your life miserable, because that's easy. And it's really easy to make it look like someone else's fault. We've been blamers from the very beginning, right? But to say, you know what, we'd love to bring some other people into this complex to say, how do we bring fellow strugglers alongside and learn together and watch the Holy Spirit do some really beautiful work? So big picture, you can't go from here directly to here. It's a broken world. The way we're wired prevents it. The only way to get from here to not leave, to not go back here, is to go through this emptying process where we let go and turn toward. And that's the path toward getting toward what you've already said you really want. You want the safety of being known, not judged, welcoming, accepting, transparent. Ultimately, we'll get this ultimately in new heavens and new earth. You'll never get it fully this side of eternity. But you'll catch glimpses of it as you follow the path that Jesus led.
And I'll say this too, as you said, that reminded me. You go through this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. You don't get here and stay, sadly. Sometimes you don't stay here 5 minutes before you go back through it again. So learning this process
is
a dance. And yeah, keep dancing.
Good.
So.
And one other thing. Learn to celebrate your victories, even the small ones. You've probably been in relationship long enough to know that you're going to bump up against the same things again and again. When you find yourself bumping up against one of those speed bumps or derailers, guardrails, and instead of kind of going off the grid, you actually learn a new step and it works better, celebrate that. Why? Because you tend to get more of what you celebrate well. Most of us are going to say, oh, we messed that up, or oh, you messed that up. Or we look at where we're messing up. We look at our failures and we keep, Charles Spurgeon once wrote, we write our disappointments in stone, but our blessings we write in dust for the wind to blow away. We keep good, painful records of our disappointments where I've been disappointed or betrayed or let down by someone that I thought should have really had my back. But our blessings, our victories, we don't keep track of those. And so to keep a running list of, hey, this happened and we went right instead of going left, and that felt really good, and it's a new step, we want to repeat that. You will get more of what you celebrate well. So keep track of one another's victories or your celebrated joint victories and celebrate them well. Good? Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for the ways you've worked in all of our lives as individuals and for the ways you're working in us as couples, the way you're perfecting the character of Jesus, not just through the places in our relationships that feel like a trip to the beach or a vacation in the mountains where things are easy and accessible and just smooth, but you tend to perfect the character of Christ in us through the hard places, the places that feel like death, places where we have to give up, where we have to be emptied of things that we thought we could not live without, or were entitled to or had every right to cling to. Continue to shape us and deepen our desires for Jesus to be precious, not just to us as individuals, but for us as a couple, so that our being united in union with Jesus and in union with one another cause that ever-deepening relationship to make Jesus more and more precious to us and more visible through our lives and through our relationship. And give us an ever-deeper hunger and thirst for that day when we see Jesus face to face and that sanctifying work is perfected and we are glorified and perfectly conformed to his image. Help us to live every day of our relationship with the expectation of the certainty of that great day. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.